Kim, are you ready?
I am ready.
And we have our borough manager online.
Yes, there she is.
All right.
I'm ready.
And I believe we have our assembly here. So it's September 8, 2020, 7 p.m. And I'd like to call the regular Wrangell assembly meeting to order. Pledge of Allegiance will be led by Assembly Member Howe.
Who's not yet on. I think he disconnected and he hasn't reconnected.
All right, I will lead it. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic
for which it stands,
one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Ceremonial matters, we have none. And roll call, please.
Yes. Assembly members Morrison.
Here.
Ryan Howe. Decker. David Powell.
Here.
Dalrymple.
Here.
Gilbert.
Here.
And Mayor Prasanka.
Thank you. Number three, persons to be heard.
So I did have Father Gallagher with St. Rose of Lima Catholic Church wanting to give the invocation, but I'm not sure if he is on the line. So if I see him pop on, I'll let you know, but I don't see that he's on the line.
All right. And if he's on a cell phone, we may tell him he has to press, *6 to unmute?
Yes. And it looks like Assembly Member Howe just joined us.
All right. So if you see Father Gallagher pop in, let us know.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Number four, amendments to the agenda. Does any Assembly Member have any amendment to the agenda?
Madam Mayor, administration has a request.
Okay.
Madam Mayor, the administration has had concerns expressed from a couple of assembly members regarding item 13A, that's approval of the revised CARES Act funding plan. And administration is requesting that that be removed from the agenda and we will bring it back at a future date as soon as we're able to get additional information.
All right, pending any dissent from the assembly, we will amend the agenda and take item 13A out. Thank you. Conflicts of interest. Does any assembly member have a conflict of interest on any item on the agenda? Hearing none. Consent agenda.
I'm sorry, it looks like Assembly Member Howe has his hand raised.
Okay, Assembly Member Howe.
Yeah, I didn't know what the order was or to chime in on removing 13A from the agenda. So we're talking about striking, like next meeting we'll come back to it? And what kind of amendment will we make to it? I'm confused.
Well, we're removing it from tonight's agenda. And I believe because of some assembly members wanted additional information. So more than likely, it'll appear on our next regular agenda.
Okay.
All right. So no conflicts of interest. Number six, consent agenda.
Move to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and seconded. Any discussion? Poll vote, please.
Sure. Assembly members Ryan Howe. You're muted.
Yes.
There we go. David Powell.
Yes.
Dalrymple.
Yes.
Morrison.
Yes.
And Vice Mayor Gilbert.
Yes. Borough Manager's Report, item 7.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I have a couple of introductory items, and then I'd like to invite Captain Spray to give the verbal update on COVID-19. But first, a couple of items. The first is that John Crowther, who is staff to the Senate Energy at the federal level, will be meeting by phone with Carol and myself tomorrow morning. He is the staff that is assisting with the work on the proposed landless legislation that will be introduced into the Senate by Murkowski and Sullivan, as I understand it, sometime this fall. And so we are meeting with him tomorrow by phone. This has been set up by our federal lobbyists. And then Mr. Crowther has agreed to be online to speak to the assembly at our next agenda on the 22nd to provide information and to entertain questions by the assembly. So I just wanted to let you know that that's coming. The collective bargaining team on behalf of the borough has been working diligently. We exchanged proposals with the union last Monday, and we are reviewing those proposals and we'll be coming back together to have our first negotiation meeting with the IBEW on Tuesday the 15th right now. So that's how that collective bargaining is progressing. I have been working quite diligently with our lobbyists, both our state and federal lobbyists, with the disaster declaration that the assembly passed at the last meeting. And I actually met with Ray Matuszewski and Randy Roro, who used to be in Senator Stedman's office. He actually just last week at the end of last week, just prior to the holiday, moved to the governor's office. So he is now the chief of staff, the assistant chief of staff. I can't remember which, but he's now in the governor's office, which is excellent. It's great because he's got such a handle on Southeast issues and is somebody that we can communicate with regarding any of our needs. So we're pleased to see that he's in the governor's office. He provided some helpful information about what kind of info needs to be included in a cover letter with the disaster declaration to go to the governor, and actually provided some insight as well as to a cover letter that should accompany the declaration going to our federal delegation. And as I said, I met with our federal lobbyists regarding this as well, and they have been helping. So I'm working on cover letters for the mayor's signature so that those can go out here in very short order. I know that Petersburg is having a conversation this evening. I don't know if they're actually passing or taking action on a resolution tonight, or if they are talking about it and going to pass one later in the month or early in October, once there are more detailed fisheries numbers for the season. But the city of Ketchikan's deputy city manager reached out to me last week and asked for a copy, a word version of our resolution, because their mayor had asked to model a resolution there after hours. So, and AML, Nils Andreessen, reached out to me and to a couple of other communities asking if we had passed resolutions. So there certainly is movement taking place on this, and we'll continue to update you, but that's been a considerable amount of work as well. And that's all of the salient information I have to add right now. If there aren't any questions about those items, I'd like to ask Captain Spray to give the COVID-19 update, Madam Mayor. Patty, you're muted.
Yeah, just one item on the Chugach Ranger boat for the museum. Did we ever obtain extra insurance for that, or what's the status of our liability requirements?
So I'm going to write that down. We don't have extra insurance yet because it's not within our possession yet. But we will need, yes.
Okay, thank you.
We will be bringing back, I can't remember if this was in my report or not, Madam Mayor. We will be bringing back an action item at the next meeting, because the MOU with the Forest Service was only good through the end of this month. So we need to have the assembly take action on that.
Okay, thank you.
Whenever you're ready for...
Yeah, I don't see any other questions from the assembly. So Captain Spray.
Okay, good evening, everybody. Just want to give you a quick update on our current numbers here for Wrangell, statewide information and some updates regarding the work that's being done regarding the vaccine. And then if you are okay, I will be passing this on to another EOC member for an update for some more information. So currently in Wrangell, we have had 19 cases total. We have 3 active cases and 16 recovered. Altogether, we have had 4,866 tests, and they had 16 pending. And those numbers come from Friday, September 4th. We do have approximately a 3-day turnaround. I understand there are some people out in the community whose tests results have taken a bit longer to get back. But for the most part, it's about a 3-day turnaround, which is really exciting. There are some increases in numbers in Anchorage and in Fairbanks. But even with those cases rising, we do have the most tested per capita for the state of Alaska here, and also the least deaths per capita. Total cases identified today were only 35, and they were all Alaskan residents, which is kind of a shift you'll notice from the weekend numbers, which were upwards of 120. So everything, you know, ebbs and flows. And so we're just going to watch that and see how things turn out. Of course, we are watching to see how Labor Day and all the gathering turn out for that. Altogether for the state of Alaska, we have had 5,833 cases, and 3,696 of those are active still at this time. Of the non-resident cases that were identified in the state, we had 891, which 688 of those are still active. So there's a fair number of active cases. Currently, we have 36 hospitalized throughout the state and a total of 42 deaths. Like I said, I wanted to talk about some vaccine information that's on everybody's mind. When will we have a vaccine for this? Starting tomorrow, there are some planning meetings with local government, emergency managers, public health, and state DHSS regarding the COVID vaccine. Some pharmacies did receive some flu vaccines, a small shipment of flu vaccines, and there's a lot of messaging coming out from the public health or public information office regarding the importance of getting your flu vaccine this year. And if you were to look at the numbers for 2018-19, which is the last kind of compiled numbers, 35.5 million people were sick with influenza or felt really crappy, as the CDC report says. And of that, 16.5 million sought medical care for their illness. So obviously these are national numbers, but overall we want to reduce people feeling poorly and our negative impact on influenza and along with COVID, and looking at what kind of impact that could have on our health system. So hopefully we'll be putting out a lot of messaging about the importance of getting our flu vaccine. And as soon as we have some more information regarding the COVID vaccine, like I said, those meetings start tomorrow with some more specific how it's going to roll out. It does look like it's going to be in 3 different waves with first responders and healthcare workers and critical infrastructure receiving the vaccine in the initial wave. And then those in your vulnerable populations and congregate settings, like your long-term care residents and senior assisted living in housing will receive the vaccine in the second wave, which right now is anticipated in the November-December timeframe, and then the general population following that later in March timeframe of 2021. None of that is confirmed. And at this point, they do anticipate the vaccine will be a two-part vaccine. Of course, I'll wait to see as more information comes through these meetings. School began today and with in-person instruction, and it will be good to hear from Superintendent Lancaster tomorrow during our EOC briefing tomorrow morning, how things went today. The EOC did place a 213 resource request to state DHSS for masks, face shields, hand sanitizer, and some yard signs and different communication pieces and stickers, which we also shared those resources with the school. We did receive approximately 3,000 masks, of which we did half that for the school. We haven't received our hand sanitizer of yet because they had to send that on the barge. Just as a reminder, the state does still have a couple health mandates in place, and that's Health Mandate 10, which is our interstate travel, Health Mandate 14 for non-congregate sheltering and the FEMA assistance there, should we open up our non-congregate sheltering and have people in there. Health Mandate 15, which relates to healthcare, specifically dentists, massage therapists, and chiropractors, is still in effect. Health Mandate 17 for shoreside and independent fisheries, and Health Mandate 18 for intrastate travel. Some communities do require some things a little more strict than what the state has recommended. And there is, at some point this week, the governor is going to be holding a town hall, and I apologize, but I don't have that information as when that's going to be happening. So just really quickly before I hand it off to Jamie, I want to give you a little bit of insight of what we're going to be talking about. So just to take another look back in time, we all know that we must learn from history so we don't repeat it. So if we look back at the start of this COVID pandemic, we weren't sure what this virus was, how it was spread, or what we could do to protect ourselves against it. Globally, many places shut down. We closed the doors and we tried to stay home. We let the scientists and medical professionals go to work, figuring out what it was we were dealing with. Over the next couple of months, restrictions lessened and safety measures were put in place to open businesses back up, hopefully safely. We watched as communities around us were identified as, quote, having a case or multiple cases. We watched as the world case count increased and death rates filled the headlines. Still not 100% certain of what we were working with, but knowing social distancing, hand washing, and maybe mask wearing were important. Then June 7th came and Wrangell received word that we had our first positive case. There was a definite different feel as many folks wondered, was I a close contact and how can I get tested? The EOC was flooded with phone calls and text messages and the overarching question, should I close my business and how can I protect myself? At this time, there were CDC guidelines and state reopening responsibly plans, but there hadn't been time to look at all the pieces and develop individualized guidance or a risk assessment for each community. Part of Alaska that we all enjoy is that it is so diverse. This is a blessing and a curse at times. In the name of COVID, it was definitely an obstacle for a bit. And what I mean by that is the state was able to put together some metrics and come up with a generalized risk level. However, the numbers used exceeded what we have here in Wrangell drastically, leaving this impractical for us to use here at a local level. Understanding the importance of looking at all the moving parts and pieces and to accurately determine our risk level, the EOC went to work to develop a Wrangell-specific risk assessment. Now, I say the EOC, but what you have in front of you is the work of Jamie Roberts with some minor input from the group. Jamie worked tirelessly to ensure that this information was compiled and ready for presentation to you tonight. She is here to present and answer any of the questions that you might have regarding her risk mitigation plan. So, Jamie?
Actually, if I could interject, it's on the agenda under new business, and it'll be first, so we have just a slight delay.
Right. And we do have a question from Assembly Member Howe.
Yeah, so the governor's not, it's not a press conference he's holding, it's a town hall and it's on COVID-19.
Correct, and we're not sure what the details of that town hall are going to be yet, and it is possible that Jamie does have some more information on our public information meeting earlier today. Last week they said we were having a governor press briefing tonight. This morning they canceled that and stated that the governor would be holding a town hall similar to some of the other ones he had back in July. I'm not sure if Jamie Roberts has any more information, Madam Mayor.
Thank you.
Any follow-up?
No, that answered my question.
All right. And item 13B is risk assessment, and we'll hear from Jamie Roberts then.
Madam Mayor, I have a question, if that's okay, of yes. Captain Bray. And that is, has there been a ramp up in the number of regular flu vaccines? Because my expectation is there will be a higher than normal number of people seeking a regular flu vaccine. And so has there been discussion about whether or not there will be enough vaccines for everybody seeking a flu shot this year?
That piece I have not heard. I know there was question as to when people should receive that flu vaccine, which epidemiology does still want to see people get that in September or October, but I haven't heard whether or not there was an increase of the supply.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Captain Spray?
Patty? Madam Mayor?
Assemblymember Morrison?
Yes. Do we know when the flu vaccine will be available here in Wrangell? Is that going to be?
I do not know, but I will find out and make sure that you know as soon as I can get that information.
For everybody out there that's wanting to get it.
Borough Manager Von Bargen, is there anything else in your report?
Madam Mayor, we discussed in the work session having our Capital Facilities Director give a brief update on where we stand and a slight history on the water treatment plant project. So I'd like to invite Amber to do that now, please.
Please.
Thank you. So where we are to date is we have an RFQ for engineering design out for public response. The two funding agencies, EDA and USDA, require us to go to a request for qualifications type solicitation for hiring the engineering firm to perform the final design. And so we are almost in the middle of that solicitation period. We have a pre-proposal meeting next Wednesday for all interested parties to attend. We did make that a mandatory in Wrangell meeting so that all of the interested parties would be able to take a tour of our water system and understand from the reservoir to the faucet, how it works, our current conditions, challenges that we face. So that they can consider all of that in the final design if it's pertinent. Proposals are due September 30th, and I believe Lisa plans to invite a couple of additional people beyond just city staff to participate in the evaluation committee of those proposals that we receive. So September 30th is when we have that slated to, we'll receive the proposals and then review and rank those firms that present their qualifications the following week and then make an award and move forward with the design. Currently, we have the design slated to be complete in 6 months after receipt of a notice to proceed. And I haven't heard that that's too aggressive a schedule from anyone yet. But when we were developing this project through the preliminary engineering report with CRW engineers, they thought that a 6-month project, while a little aggressive, is just simply a fast track project and it's doable. So that's what we're shooting for.
Okay. And for our new assembly members, could you give just a brief technology statement about how a DAF plant works?
Yes, very brief is that the treatment system, the raw water comes into the plant. It's first injected with a coagulant, such as alum. There's a couple of other products, but alum is what tested out in our pilot plant to work the best. And so that coagulant causes all of the organics to combine. They get sent on to a flocculation tank, and then the air is distributed up through the through the tank, and it creates the flocculation. All the sediment rises to the top, it gets skimmed off, and then the water continues on through the multimedia filtration process. That is primarily the DAF system. Beyond the DAF that we're installing, the water would then move forward to the storage tank. And then our plan right now is to pull our existing sand filter tanks offline, create additional storage with those 4 basins that we have. So the water would be stored there and then chlorinated before it's sent on to the distribution system.
And there's a slight modification to the building that may be required. Is that correct?
That's correct. We'll actually eliminate the ozone process in the new system. That is in, we call it the ozone building. It's also where the staff have their office. And the ozone will be eliminated. And then the other portion of the existing, the system will be eliminated. But the portion of our existing process that we call the roughing filter, it's kind of a pre-filter before the water gets to our final sand filter process. That building will be modified by enlarging it, and that's what will house the 2 DAF trains. So they're a modular unit.
Thank you. Any questions from the assembly or borough manager? Any comments?
Madam Mayor, I have an addition that I would like to clarify. So one of the concerning items regarding the project is the treatment of the sludge material, essentially, that comes from water treatment, and whether or not that would need to be treated on site or could be piped down to our sewer treatment plant for treatment. And the preliminary engineering report actually has a recommendation that be treated on site. That on-site treatment kicks our water treatment level operator certification requirement to a level 4. We're currently at a level 2, and it is not possible for us locally to get that level 4 certification. It's only possible for us to go up to a level 3 locally, which is what the new plant will be at. And our water treatment plant operator is working on that right now. We had been advised by USDA that we would only be allowed to do the project that was recommended in the preliminary engineering, even though, as I like to say, never in the history of the world has there been no changes between preliminary and final design. They were staunch in suggesting this. We went to our federal delegation and asked for assistance. The staff from the federal delegation said, we need to understand whether or not this is a regulatory item from the Code of Federal Regulations or whether this is an internal policy. So Amber went back to USDA and asked that very question and was finally able to get an answer. And the answer that was given is, if the delegation is getting involved, we'll certainly be able to review changes that come in the final engineering. So it appears that not only are we going to be able to have the final engineering dictate what is the best alternative for us, which, because we aren't unable to get to a level 4 treatment plant, is going to be off-site treatment of that material.
USDA has also suggested that they may be able to, so let me back up just a little bit. When we received more money from USDA, I think we went from, Amber, correct me if I'm wrong, or Carol, we went from 2.6 to 3 million, is that correct, in EDA funding?
We went from 1.5 to nearly 3.
Okay. So we originally had, I apologize, I was just informed my video was not on.
Right.
We originally had more money from USDA. When we got additional funds from EDA, they backed off the amount of money that USDA reduced the amount of money they were going to give us. So when Amber approached them and said, look, we're going to need to go with what final engineering tells us, USDA even went so far to say, perhaps we could reallocate some of that additional money back to you that we took away. So we believe that the situation with the treatment has been solved. And the concern that was out there regarding the treatment level certification that we had to have has also been solved. So that's been a big concern, and my thanks to Amber for fleshing that out with USDA following the work with our delegation.
Thank you. Assemblymember Powell.
So we're trying to sell land out the road there and everything. Is this plant going to be efficient enough for what we're trying to do? And another question is, how much more will it treat for the town?
Yeah, so through the engineering design phase also, the engineers are tasked with ensuring that the flow capacity will meet our demand for 20 years forward. That is what the preliminary engineering report did, and we've asked them to evaluate and reconfirm that. And again, that is part of, if you care to read the preliminary engineering report, it is online. And you can actually go to the bids and RFP section, and it was made a part of the RFQ for the engineering solicitation if you just want to see that whole thing. But through that process, the Future Institute project was considered as well for that master plan that we were discussing at the time. So that is what they're required to reconfirm. And a part of what Lisa just described as far as USDA allowing us to go back now and make sure that we do get the best option for Wrangell. And we told them we've gone through this process before and got sold a bill of goods with a slow sand filter that didn't work. And this time we have to get it right. We don't have another chance. So they're very willing to work with us, and then suggested as well that we require, as part of the engineering design services, that they provide an update to the preliminary engineering report. So it will, the final engineer will actually provide an update, a tech memo to say, this is what the conceptual plan looked like, and here's what we're recommending as the final plan. And they'll make any changes to the preliminary engineering report that they find is not suitable, and that their new design will be based on, if that makes sense.
So,
that will include the flow capacity for that 20-year projection.
So right now in this design, how many gallons per minute more is it to flow right now in this design?
Currently, it's designed for 1,800 gallons per minute.
What do we flow right now?
1,000.
I'm sorry, I'm looking at the whole plan right now. I'm trying to find what I was reading, and it might take a second, so we can continue.
All right. Any other questions? Amber, are you looking that up, or?
I'm not. I just provided the information that I have.
Okay.
Where did you get that information, Amber?
It's in the preliminary engineering report. Do you have a copy of that?
Yeah, I'm actually looking for it right now. because I thought in this design, I seen that it only did 1.8 million gallons per minute. I think that's our per million. And I thought it was.
It's 1.8 million gallons per day. That's the daily average.
So
if you want me to find that information for you, I'll see if I've got it on my computer.
I'm just concerned that in the preliminaries when I read it and stuff, and you are quite right, this is actually a very long document. I can swear that I seen somewhere, and I just want this to be right, just like you said. We do not want to be sold a bill of goods. So I can swear that I seen this plant as designed right now. It was only going to do 250 gallons per minute more than our plant right concurrently. So that's only 1250, but you're saying 1800. And I swear I seen this 1250 somewhere. I'd really like to make sure and look into that really closely, because I do not want to be 5 years down the road here and we've got 20 houses out there at the Institute property and we can't supply water and we're looking for another whole, you know, $5 million to supply water out there. So yeah, I really want that looked into and get back to us on that.
Absolutely. And again, that if you look at the RFQ, the scope of work clearly identifies that the engineering effort through this final design will ensure that the flow that is designed will meet the capacity that we need.
So that you brought me to another question then. If I'm correct in the first one, how are they going? I'm it may be irrelevant right now because you haven't got it yet, but how are they going to get, I'm almost positive it's 250. Because when I was reading it, I have notes here, but they're not perfect. And I mean, I'm sorry about that, but I don't know. I would really like to make sure 100% positive and be brought back to us, especially before we approve this whole system.
Yeah, absolutely. I can give you a write-up on that. I'll send that to Lisa. Thinking back, there was some consideration put forth regarding the four existing sand filter basins that were to be converted to extra storage. And so they reduced a portion of the full flow capacity with the assumption that the added will be getting basically double the storage of water, treated water that we have currently. So with that added storage capacity and the quick turnaround of treated water that we'll have with the DAF, they projected a smaller flow rate. I know Wayne's got concerns with that, and we've discussed it at length. And that is why we have it in the RFQ for the engineers to review and confirm that what is in the PER is sufficient. If they find that it's not, it's their obligation to modify that and ensure that we get what we need.
Okay.
And may we request that be put on the agenda for our next regularly scheduled assembly meeting?
Would you like a memo on it? With the details?
Yes, a memo and a question and answer period, a discussion.
So can I just clarify something? So the RFQ is on the street right now, asking, and part of that RFQ is to make sure that these engineers that review the plan are getting us the flow that we need. I guess I'm concerned. I'm happy to have Amber, and Amber should do a report based on the current PER, the information that was just discussed, and get that to you. But I guess I'm trying to understand what the discussion would be at the next meeting.
Well, I think for my peace of mind, and probably Assemblymember Powell, I don't want to speak for him, but to make sure that we have all the factors being adequately considered.
If I may.
Please.
If okay with Lisa, I would propose to provide a memo with all of the details from the preliminary engineering report specific to this issue. And that is the best information that we have to date. That will be reviewed and confirmed by the final engineering firm.
Or not confirmed, or amended.
Confirmed. Yeah, they will reconfirm what that needs to look like for us. If what the preliminary engineering report says indicates too low a flow, then they will make a recommendation to ensure that we meet our needs for 20 years forward.
Okay. Assemblymember Powell, does that help
well,
you?
In regards to what Lisa's asking, the concern I have is if it doesn't, when we approve this, and I'm sorry, again, I don't have the exact number in front of me, but I believe it was a little over $9 million for a size of a plant that was going to, it's been a long time ago, so almost double our flow, okay? And what I'm, problem is, if the preliminary, what I've read, it's not going to double our flow. And is that going to be, if they come out and say RFQ, okay, you guys got too small of a plant, are we all of a sudden going to be looking at millions more to up the size of the plant to come to at least three quarters to double our flow? Do you see what I'm asking? I'm trying to figure out, you know, when we first talked about this, it was almost a double of the flow. Now we're 18 is what Amber thought. I thought 1250, which is only 250. That's where I'm at. I'm trying to figure out where we got the numbers from double to 850 to 250 in my eyes. And I'm worried is what I am. I'm worried about this plant. I'm worried that it's going to be too small.
So we can provide you with the information so that we can lay out in a report what you have just asked for right there and all of the other aspects related to this that Amber just outlined.
Okay.
And then what Amber indicated previously is I am going to ask for at least one and perhaps two members of the assembly to be appointed to sit on the committee that reviews the RFQs so that we can move forward, so that you're on the review committee and a decision is made on to whom the award is made for the engineering for this. So the process, I just want to confirm, we will do the engineering. The engineering will come back with a recommendation and a cost estimate. You will see that well in advance. I agree with you right now, Assemblymember Powell. We can provide to you what the PER says and the estimate associated with the PER. But I'm not sure that we would be able to tell you right now if the engineer comes back and says, so Amber, correct me if I'm saying something completely out of turn. If the trains have to be bigger, or let's say we were to have to add a third train, which I don't know that is an option, but if we had to have bigger trains in order to create more flow, what that means in terms of cost, additional cost beyond what was originally estimated for us. That's what you're getting at, correct?
Correct. And also, I believe we're only doing two trains. Is that correct?
Yes.
And is it also correct that if one of these trains goes down, we do not have adequate flow to the town at all?
So there's a question of redundancy there, and that's being addressed. It'll be addressed.
Okay. I'm going to request that when you get this, Lisa, back, that I would like our current water management person to be in on this whole thing too, because sure. I got questions for him, and I would like to have them answered.
And Assemblymember Powell and Borough Manager, our Borough Clerk suggested a work session. Would that help?
I was just heading there, given the conversation that we're having.
Okay, I agree.
Okay, so a work session before our next regularly scheduled assembly meeting, correct?
Yes.
Okay, I think that's proper.
Thank you.
Yep. Any other questions? Borough Manager, are you finished with your report?
Right, unless there are other questions for those items that were provided, yes, my report is complete.
Okay, I don't see any other questions, so we'll go on to number 8, clerk report.
I'll make it fast. In my report, you could see a copy of the sample ballot. So those are set. We do have one seat that nobody submitted a letter of interest, or excuse me, a declaration for, and that was for the Port Commission, unexpired for a 2-year term. Right now, I'm accepting letters of interest for various boards and committees. So I have 1 3-year term for planning and zoning. I have 2 Parks and Rec 3-year terms. 2 Wrangell Convention and Visitors Bureau terms, and 2 Economic Development Committee terms. I've received 1 letter of interest for the EDC committee. And time is running out. So if anybody has any questions, otherwise, I don't have anything else.
All right. Any questions? All right, moving right along. Number 9, mayor and assembly business. Does any assembly member have anything to report? Okay, seeing none. Mayor and assembly appointments, we have none. Number 11, public hearing. We have no public hearing at this meeting. Number 12, unfinished business. We have no unfinished business. So that brings us to new business, item 13B. This is a discussion item only. And assembly members, you can find this on page 133. This is Wrangell Community COVID-19 Risk Assessment. And I believe this is Jamie Roberts will present this, start us out on this discussion.
Thank you. Good evening. So like Captain Spray said, this was a risk assessment that was compiled by the EOC with the intent to kind of take a look at all the factors that go into trying to understand the risk that COVID presents to our community. And originally when we started, we kind of set a deadline so that we could provide this information to the school, so that they could make informed decisions about what level that they were going to operate with at. So our community risk level was one component of what they considered in their reopening decisions. And so you guys have the risk assessment, and I kind of put a narrative or a glossary together that explains each of the pieces of and how they're being used. And it's We took a look at 4 big overarching categories, and that was what the disease situation is within the community, our vulnerability, our ability to detect COVID within our community, and also our ability to respond to it. And each category has a set of indicators, and there are 4 levels that we took a look at, levels 1 through 4. And so how we use this assessment is at the end of the week on Friday, I get data from Dr. Prasunka, from Public Health, off of the State Data Hub, from the fire chief, from the police chief. And I compile that data, and some of it involves a little bit of math. And then I kind of go along for each particular indicator, and I circle what, you know, are we at level 1, 2, 3, or 4 for each indicator? And then I provide that data back to the EOC on Monday mornings, and we have a discussion about what level that we are operating at. And so we finished fine-tuning this last week or a couple weeks ago. It's been an ongoing process. And, you know, we find now that we're able to get pretty much all the numbers and the data that we need to be able to complete this chart. And those numbers are mostly coming from local sources, because the state's data hub, there's a lag in the information that's available. And for some indicators, they lump us with like 7 other communities. And some of the risk levels that they put together at the state level are really based on very, you know, much larger populations on a per 100,000 population. And those don't really work well when you have a community of our size. And so a lot of the smaller communities are kind of having to come up with their own risk assessments that meet their local needs. And so that is what we have worked on. And I'm here to answer any questions that you might have about it.